Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Claudia Wu.
And I'm Carrie Diamond.
And we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine that celebrates women and food. If you listen to our summer shows, you'll know that Emily Elson of the cult Brooklyn Pie Shop, 4 and 20 Blackbirds, was one of our guests. Well, we invited Emily to come back around Thanksgiving to talk about pies. So she's in our studios right now, or soon, to talk about all the baking. Thanksgiving is the foodiest of holidays, so we're sure a lot of you are planning to bake and cook for next Thursday.
Thanksgiving isn't the only holiday next week. November 28th is the annual Small Business Saturday by American Express. This day, which falls between Black Friday and Cyber Monday, was created by Amex to celebrate the entrepreneur. And all of you who listen know a big part of what we do at Cherry Bomb is celebrating entrepreneurs, so a day dedicated to the kind of people and the kind of businesses we love is a big deal. As many of you also know, Amex has sponsored this season of Radio Cherry Bomb, and next week we'll be doing a range of activities with them to promote our favorite small businesses. You'll be able to check out our social media as we'll be spotlighting the boutiques, the restaurants, the coffee shops, the bookstores, and other places around the country that you love, that we love. If you have a favorite small business that you'd like to bring to our attention, you can tag Cherry Bomb and use the hashtag ShopSmall. Claudia and I also have some travel planned next week. We'll be hitting, where are we going?
Chicago and Oakland. So if you guys have any suggestions of places to check out on Saturday, let us know. We'll be around.
And especially places to eat, because the Oakland food scene is amazing. It's going to be hard to decide where to go.
I know. There's so many places out there that are so good.
We absolutely have to go to Brown Sugar Kitchen. We haven't hit that place yet.
Yeah, and Tanya was at last year's Jubilee, for those of you who caught her. She's great.
Tanya Holland, who's the owner and the chef, and she's been in our magazine, so we've got to get her on Radio Cherry Bomb, and we've got to go to her restaurant, and then
we're just going to eat this whole trip, I think.
Exactly. So as part of our Shop Small program, we've invited Nicole Leinbach-Ryla to speak with us today. Nicole's an indie retail expert. She's the founder of Retail Market, which provides news, education, and support for indie retailers. And she's a spokesperson for Small Business Saturday. And we have her on the line. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing great. You guys are talking about all this great food. It brings me back to my days in Chicago and all the great independent places there I'd love to eat.
Oh, yep. You'll have to send us a list of places to go.
I will, for sure. Absolutely.
Where are you based today?
So I'm in Denver, which also has a fabulous, fun food scene and great shopping small scene. So fortunately for us, no matter where we go nowadays, I feel like we can find good stuff in the small category and independent scene, whether it's food or traditional retail.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming easier and easier around the country to find awesome small businesses, which is a nice part of all of this. So I'm curious about you. So you are the small business expert, the indie retail expert. Were you the kind of kid who always had a lemonade stand?
You know, it's funny you should ask that. I was, actually. I was, you know, I think my first sort of entrepreneurial streak came about when I was trying to save up some money and became a babysitter in the neighborhood. And so I, along with my twin sister, we made flyers and would pass them out. And looking back, I realized I was more into the marketing of the business than I was actually babysitting.
That's pretty
so
funny.
I was
you made
way
flyers?
More into building a brand reputation in the neighborhood, you know, making sure I was the first person called. And that generates, you know, my creative streak, if you will, in the marketing area. But yeah, looking back, I had a lot of that. I was also very involved in various organizations in elementary and middle and high school that I would lead up, like a fashion club, for example, where we would produce different retail established focused events, like for fundraising and fashion shows, and always would just take the lead and really push it through to become something that had never been before.
Wow. I was a babysitter in the neighborhood, but I guess I just waited around for people to call me, word of mouth. I guess I was the least bad babysitter in the neighborhood, so that's how I got work.
I think it still works pretty well. Babysitters are in hot demand.
They are, although they get paid so much now. I think I would get I don't know, I'd babysit for a few hours and get $2, and I thought I was the richest person on the planet. But today, I think it's like $25 an hour or something to babysit.
It's pretty high. I have two young kids, so I can attest to that. Pretty high.
So I guess this begs the question, is there an entrepreneurial personality?
You know, I definitely think that there is a personality that seems to shadow so many different entrepreneurs. Certainly, I think you have to be comfortable with yourself and hearing the words no and being able to look past them. I think that's huge when it comes to entrepreneurs, because those people who are less confident or feel insecure about their own personal choices are probably less likely to be entrepreneurs, because they want validation from people. And when you're an entrepreneur, you're not always going to hear yes.
That's true.
Sadly.
We know that.
I know, right?
Tough skin. Yeah, exactly. So speaking of that, what are the common qualities of an entrepreneur? You have to have they all have a tough skin. What else?
I think you need to have leadership qualities. You need to be self-driven. You need to be able to push and motivate yourself to move forward. You can't wait for anyone else to tell you what to do next. You need to make those decisions. So certainly determination and, you know, that endurance within yourself to move forward. I also think humor. I think you need to be able to take things lightly and not take everything so seriously that it's going to emotionally bring you down. Because there will be moments as an entrepreneur when you might question some of the choices you're making or the direction you're going, and you need to be able to look past that with confidence and be able to change as well. You can't be so strict with your plan that you can't adjust according to maybe some variations that you've identified, or consumer changes or environment changes, whatever that might be.
I think what you're talking about applies to when you read your Yelp reviews mm-hmm. and you just want to jump off a bridge.
And that's where humor comes in, gang, because you got to take it with a grain of salt sometimes.
Exactly. So you are not just an entrepreneur indie retail expert, you are also an entrepreneur yourself. You started, if I'm describing it correctly, a trade publication called Retail Minded.
I did, yes. So going back to 2007, I had been really fortunate to work for some major companies that included Nordstrom's and Adidas, Franco Sarto Footwear, and working with major retailers through those roles, as well as media publications. And what I found was that the smaller businesses really didn't have that support that so many of their competitors did. So essentially, Retail Minded came to life to deliver news, education, and support to independent retailers. And I define retail as anybody who sells something to someone. So whether it's a product or a service, if you're selling it to a consumer, a B2C business, it falls into the retail category. So it really aims to support that audience, and we do it through retailminded.com. We have 8 issues a year that we produce as well, and we also produce events through the Independent Retailer Conference, which came to life just a couple years later after Retail Minded. So it's a great way to just connect industry thought leaders and experts to the small business owners within our country and really the world. We do reach a global market.
So what's behind this big boom in small businesses?
You know, I think there's a huge growth and a huge desire for small businesses because, well, a few reasons. The first is it's exciting to be able to bring something to life and work for yourself. And if you have that passion and vision and endurance to do so, that alone is an exciting way to live. It doesn't mean it doesn't come with challenges, but entrepreneurs in general are most likely looking to live a life they want to lead. They don't want to work under someone else's sort of terms or conditions. If they're passionate about something, whether it's food or whether it's bikes or whether it's home goods and accessories, they're able to live more of a life where they can surround themselves with what they enjoy most.
You just described Claudia. Claudia has made it clear several times she doesn't want to work for the man or the woman.
And I think she probably speaks for many people when she says that. Yeah.
Claudia.
I mean, I think it's
I will say this, though, being an entrepreneur myself, and I don't know how you guys feel, when you do work for yourself, at the end of the day, you still work for so many other people because you have to consider who your clients are, who your customers are. So there's still a lot of people to think about, but at the end of the day, you get to make the final choice, if you will.
I would say there's nothing compared to being your own boss. And it's totally worth it, even though it's a tougher path. I think that in the end, it's more rewarding. You're just more self-sufficient, I guess.
Nicole brings up a good point, though. I mean, I think that is the hardest part about having your own business. It really isn't just doing what you want to do all day long. It's, you know, having to be open to market forces and customers and what's going on around you. Speaking of which, Nicole, why don't we talk about, I hate to use the word mistake, but what are some common mistakes that entrepreneurs make? I'd love to give some of our listeners some advice.
Well, and it kind of goes back to what we were just discussing, but I think if you look at passion alone as being a driver for a successful business, that alone can't keep your business alive. It doesn't pay the bills. So you have to combine your passion with the right marketing strategy, and I think mistakes are often made when entrepreneurs and small business owners aren't positioning themselves or educating themselves enough to realize, okay, even though I might be really good at something, I still need to bring market attention to this, bring consumer dollars towards it. So how will I do that? And I think the biggest mistake entrepreneurs make is not investing that sort of time or effort into gaining that part of their business and strengthening that part of their business.
Where do you even start in that respect?
Well, that's a great question. Certainly, I'd like to think that resources like your radio show, for example, or RetailMinded.com help because it gives insight. It brings some thought leadership and provokes ideas for entrepreneurs. And I think, you know, people need to step back from whatever it is their passion is in which they want to focus a business on and look at the behind-the-scenes details, the operations, the finances. Put themselves in a zone that might not be as comfortable or as exciting, but forcing themselves to sit there so that they can get to that exciting part, if that makes sense.
One of the hard things for me, and you know, I work with Claudia on Cherry Bomb, and I have some restaurants in Brooklyn, is finding the experts who can help you, like the accountants, the PR people, things like that. Like, how do you even? It seems like you could just hire this endless list of people to do your taxes, do your accounting, do your social media, do all these things for you. Where do you even begin to find those people and put together a list of the people who can truly help you and you truly need?
Such a great question. I would encourage small businesses to look at their local chamber of commerces or local organizations like a downtown association that has more local businesses that are also probably small business owners themselves and are able to support you in various services. They often have a really great resource guide, if you will, that identifies these resources. I know at RetailMinded.com we also have a resource guide that offers various companies to support small business owners in the different operations of their business. So looking locally at a chamber or another locally minded association, or looking at your trade industry resources, that can also direct you to trusted, approved resources, if you will. And, you know, even like ShopSmall.com, for example, gives you such great stuff too that provides insight and resources to help small business owners. So certainly there's a variety of places.
I think one thing we forget because we all get so busy is also just talking to each other and talking to other small business people. You know, Emily, who's coming on the show next, has her pie shop not too far from my businesses. And we were on the phone the other day and we just wound up talking for like a half an hour about business stuff. And I feel like you so often don't do that with other people, you know, whether they're your competitors or just neighbors who have businesses. And I think there's a lot, I think that's a big part of what we do at Cherry Bomb is just try to bring all these different people together. But there's so much in your backyard, just talking to other business owners.
Yeah, that's a big part.
Oh, I agree.
Like networking is a huge part of I think, of running a business and being in a community and getting work and stuff. So definitely
You don't want to give away all your secrets. You don't want to give away all your secrets, but I think there's definitely a lot of sharing that can take place that maybe we forget to do.
100%. And I also think that communities, when they rally together and the small businesses within them come together, whether they're dining, traditional retail, salons, spas, they can really advocate each other and help spread the word through word of mouth marketing to their own customers, which helps each other in their own growth and success of their respective businesses as well.
Absolutely. Cross-marketing, people. That's what it's all about. Yeah. So speaking of Small Business Saturday, you are a spokesperson for Small Business Saturday. How'd that come about?
I am. I'm really fortunate to work with them. This is my second year as a spokesperson, but I've been involved in Small Business Saturday since it came to life, because as a small business owner myself, I identified right away how valuable Small Business Saturday was. And it's just very exciting to be able to help support such a great, fantastic day that kicks off the holiday season, but more importantly, support small businesses. And I think that's really why I love it so much, is that it's such a huge supporter of that small business crowd, and it gives so much to small business owners and really celebrates them and encourages customers to shop small on Small Business Saturday.
What are your plans for Saturday? Next Saturday?
Next Saturday. Mm-hmm. So there are so many fantastic things going on in New York City. So I will be in New York City. There's just a lot of different fun events going on that Small Business Saturday will be a part of. In really any community, there's going to be such a fantastic push of different exciting stores and restaurants and spas and salons that are all doing different things. So no matter where you are, you can find something. And I always tell people to go to shopsmall.com, because if you put in your zip code, it'll actually pull up whatever's going on within your community.
Oh, smart idea. Well, Nicole, if you find yourself in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, stop by one of my businesses.
Absolutely.
We have one last question for you. So many people, especially like young people getting out of college, are very entrepreneurial minded today. And seems like everybody wants to start their own business. And you have things like Kickstarter and all this crowdfunding that makes it easier than ever to get your business off the ground. If you are someone of any age who wants to start a small business, what are the first steps you need to take?
I think you need to first identify the general concept of the business. So what is it that you're generally aiming to do? Are you looking to have a B2B business, a B2C business? Are you looking to be a traditional retailer? Do you want to be more of a wholesaler? Once you have that identified, narrow in on what your competition is, because competition doesn't always have to be a bad thing. You just need to understand it. So you need to really analyze who your competitors are, understand what the threats might be working within the same market as them, as well as what your strengths are within that same market. From there, of course, you do need to look at the cost involved and what your overhead not only is to get it going, but look at least in 12 months ahead of what your costs will be so that you can plan for that. Because beyond your professional growth and your professional goals here, you have to still maintain a personal existence. So finances, you know, you have to pay the bills, if you will. You have to consider moving out of apartment and maybe moving in with your parents.
Uh-oh.
If that's the case. I know, right? But a lot of people do it. So you need to realize what the sacrifices are and what the realities are of you bringing this business to life.
All right.
Such good advice.
Make sure mom and dad, you're in a good place with mom and dad, basically.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You got to ask too. You can't just show up.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much. It's been really great speaking with you. Please email us all your favorite woman-owned businesses in Denver. We'd love to know about them. And listeners, you should check out Nicole's website. It's retailmarket.com.
Retailminded.com.
Retailminded.com. So check it out. And thank you for chatting with us. Have a great Small Business Saturday on November 28th.
Thank you. You guys too.
All right. And everybody stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute with Emily Elson from 420 Blackbirds.
And Pie.
We'll be right back. If I had a magic wand, tomorrow everyone in the world would have enough food to eat that was culturally appropriate and delicious. The planet would be thriving because all the food would have been grown and produced in a way that sustains us, both our bodies and our world. But man, I do not have a magic wand. What I do have is you and this radio station, the Heritage Radio Network. That's what we're here to do. We're here to help lead the way to a future that's more delicious, that's more fun, where we're healthier, where the planet's healthier, and we want you to be a part of that. We can't do it without you. As a nonprofit radio station, we depend on the support of our listeners. So take a minute out of your day, visit the website, and click the big beating donate tab. Throw us a few bucks. Every bit helps. We're counting on you.
Hey, everybody. Okay, sorry. We are eating when we should be talking.
Carrie's just not even slicing a pie. She just dug into the middle.
Anyway, Emily Elson is here, and you know what that means. When Emily's on the show, we eat. She was here over the summer, and she brought us the most spectacular pie I've ever had in my life.
She brought us 2.5 pies each, so we'll just be slowly consuming them on the air.
But you brought us that sour cherry pie.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was life-changing.
I feel that way about sour cherries, too.
Oh, you know? My gosh.
I think we talked about the fact that we don't always get them, you know, like some years they aren't producing, and we had a good year this year, so I'm with you.
So this Thanksgiving, you brought us your 5 flavors.
Well, the matcha's not actually on the menu, it's in consideration for the Christmas menu.
Mm. Oh, it's good.
It's green.
It's green.
Yeah, so we like little theme things like that.
So tell us about the flavors.
Yeah,
so
we have our takes on the classics, basically. Yep.
Brown butter, pumpkin, your salted caramel,
pecan,
apple.
Pecan.
There's a brown butter pumpkin. You haven't seen it yet. Carrie's eating.
I'm sorry.
She's
I'm very
distracted.
Excited. I'm like so distracted.
She's in pecan heaven.
You have to talk about
the
this
pecan
one.
Pie, which looks amazing. And what's the last one over there?
Salty honey, which is the one of our cult status recipes that sort of we didn't expect it to be so incredibly famous, but it is. The brown butter pecan. And what you're enjoying, Carrie, is the bittersweet chocolate pecan.
This is so
and
good.
Pecan.
Yeah.
So
oh my God,
for those listening,
those pecans are really good. They
come to move
from,
this away
from Texas,
me.
From this organic farm in Texas.
Oh, wow.
And small family farm. Good stuff.
So for those people who are listening and not eating pie, is it too late to order a pie from you guys?
No.
Oh,
no.
It's not.
The only day that you can't pre-order now is Wednesday. But we still have pickup slots available for Tuesday and for Thursday morning, Thanksgiving Day, at both locations, at the Brooklyn Public Library Cafe, at the Pie Shop, and if any of you are like New York, Long Island, we have a shop out in Orient, a seasonal shop there, and we're taking pies out there too. So if you want a pie for there, just call the Orient shop. It's a little smaller crowd. But anyway, Tuesday, Thursday, and we'll have first come, first serve all week.
Amazing.
We take a number of orders that we know we can accomplish without failing, and then whatever we bake on top of that, we do first come, first serve. So
you guys just moved into a bigger space in a commissary space.
Yeah,
where you're doing a lot of your baking. How has that increased the amount of pies that you can make?
Well, it's made things a lot more organized. That's for sure. We built the kitchen. Actually, we're kind of calling it the pie atelier or the pie kitchen. I know that sounds pretentious, but it doesn't have a feel of like a big commissary factory. There's skylights and windows, and it's a really nice place to work. Our offices are there. Hopefully by next spring, fingers crossed, we'll have a cafe space and a garden. So it doesn't really feel like your typical kind of food factory. But it has made our work lives a lot better. We've been, Thanksgiving, it is the pie holiday of the United States, so we start planning for it in August, truthfully, and, start taking orders in early October. And it's not even so much about the money as it is about just making sure that everybody that wants pie from us gets it. And our wholesale clients as well, which is a new aspect. So, for example, before we had the kitchen, we would rent a kitchen this time of year and work in somebody else's kitchen. And that's fun and all, but you learn. But at a certain point, you would just want to have your own space. So,
exactly.
So the wholesale business is new for you guys. Where do you guys wholesale to?
Well, it's relatively new. Prior to the space, the new kitchen, we we're doing a small amount of wholesale. For example, Rucola Restaurant was an excellent client, or is an excellent client. We worked with the Whitney, Untitled at the Whitney when it was uptown. And a few, a handful of people that we liked, you know, that we wanted to work with. And then now we've opened it up to a lot more people that we like. And it's, you know, it's a range of things. We work with Shake Shack. We provide pie for their what they call the Pie Oh My Concrete, and they're fantastic folks. And we work with Finelli's in the city, Joe Coffee. We're doing mini pies for them. Savory pies for different bars and restaurants, Ramona up in Greenpoint, some of our neighbors, it's growing, it's a growing list, and we're still looking for great folks that want to have pie on their menu, so if you're interested, definitely get in touch.
Are you doing a lot of collaborations? Like this matcha pie, custard pie is with a puto.
Yes, which was extremely exciting. That came about because we have a woman on our team who's been with us for a long time. She's Japanese, and every time she goes to Japan, I'm like, bring me some green tea. Because it's, you can't, you know, the green tea from Japan doesn't compare to anywhere else. And then she came back, I think her fiance suggested, why don't you guys make something with matcha? And so we started with just like what you can get your hands on, you know, through the food suppliers. And we were like, oh, it kind of looks like a swamp pie. We're like, it's the Gowanus Canal pie. It was so, the green wasn't, I mean, really, it wasn't that appealing. We weren't sure if we were going to keep going because it was kind of like, ugh. And then through a connection, you know how it is with Instagram and food and people you meet, we met a really lovely writer, and she knew the folks from Ipido and was like, can I introduce you? And so their tea master came and showed us the difference. And I showed him the matcha we were working with. He's like, we don't even have that grade. Like, it doesn't, in our, we don't even create that. And so that's, it gets that beautiful, vibrant green. And the matcha flavor came through just so much more. So we gave it a simple treatment. And so, you know, then we started working together because it's like the same drive, you know, a high quality, you know, you want to feature high quality. You want to feature the stuff that people are putting great energy into, and they're like 300 years old. So,
so if you want to see this pie, you can just go on Instagram and look at Birds Black. Yep. Which is your Instagram account. We have it on our Instagram account, Cherry Bomb Mag. So we promised everyone, since Thanksgiving is right around the corner, that we would talk all about baking.
Okay.
And baking pies in particular, because that seems to be the time when everybody breaks out all their stuff and starts cooking.
True that.
So if you're baking pie this year, let's talk through some of the some of your favorite tips and tricks.
Well, I always advise, you know, Thanksgiving is a time when you're often entertaining for a large group of people, so it's not like you have a lot of leisurely time the day of or even the day before. And, you know, if you want to learn from, you know, the pros, I guess, this is how we do it. We start preparing the dough in October. So because I know it sounds crazy, but pie dough does freeze well. We don't want to freeze it for a year, but, you know, for a short amount of time, you're fine. So say you want to make two or three pies and you feel like, oh, you know, I can't make pie crust the day of, and I don't even recommend making it the day of. You could make it on Monday and refrigerate it until you're ready to roll out. And I say definitely bake those pies on Wednesday, you know, because they can sit overnight. And even if you want to warm them off, but that way you know you've got a cool pie that's ready to go. Putting all the things you have to put in the oven for Thanksgiving, unless you have four ovens, which not many people do, but, you know, the oven's going to be pretty occupied from early morning. At least my mother's oven was. And Grandma made all the pies, so she didn't have to worry about that. But get those pies made the day before. And if you want to serve them warm, you can just warm them off in the oven.
Is there okay at room temperature?
Room temperature, absolutely. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what would be the way we serve everything. But some people like the idea of, oh, it just came out of the oven. But the reality is your pie will be better after it's had time to set and the flavors develop and everything come together. I mean, I particularly like the matcha and the pumpkin, the brown butter and the pumpkin. I think it comes out after 2 days, even more. It's like cake. You know, good cake is often frozen as well to just, like, get all the fats and everything to come together and be harmonious.
So if you make your pie crust this weekend, you can just leave it in the fridge? You don't have to freeze it?
This weekend I would freeze it. If you make it on like Tuesday, you could just fridge it, Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
But if you make it on Saturday or Sunday, throw it in the freezer, you know, shape it into like little discs, and then you could even roll it out. You could thaw it, you know, pull it out on Tuesday night and bake your pies on Wednesday, or even Tuesday would be okay, but Wednesday would be my recommendation.
And you too have a little secret for your pie, for your pie crust.
Crust?
You use vinegar,
We use
right?
cider vinegar, yep, apple cider vinegar. It's sort of the same concept as if you're using vodka, or I've heard people use lemon juice.
Vodka?
Yeah.
And pie crust?
Yeah, yeah.
Never heard of that.
A vodka crust, which is, you know, vodka is relatively neutral. It's like, I think it's a Cook's Illustrated thing. I think those guys, the test kitchen there, mm-hmm. I think they came, well, I'm not, there might be longer provenance to it than that, but they popularized it. And vinegar, they all kind of act in the same way. First of all, the citrus or cider vinegar adds tang and kind of, you know, hits that other note. And it supposedly softens the glutens a little bit, so you don't get like brittle, you know, you get a little more. Our crust can have a little bready texture when it's done right, like a little kind of, you know, it falls somewhere between pasta and like a cracker.
Do you have an apple cider vinegar brand you prefer?
If I were recommending for a home cook, I would say like,
Bragg's?
Yes, yeah. Exactly, because it's got the, you know, good stuff in it.
All right.
But, you know, even regular white vinegar you could use, or you just wouldn't want to use like balsamic or something.
And then walk us through the popular fillings. Like, how far in advance can you make fillings?
So for pumpkin, the only pie that we will open a can for is pumpkin. We never open canned fruit, anything like that. But pumpkin, you know, Libby's and the organic pumpkins that are available on the market, it's really the best because it's pureed to a good consistency. It's a sugar pumpkin. But if you want to do your own pumpkin, then I would suggest roasting your pumpkin a couple days in advance. Puree it so you break down all the fibers. Pumpkin filling could be made at least a day or two in advance. It should be fine. Apples, you'll want to prep your apples like a day. You can prep them up to a day before you're going to make the pie, and you can sweat them in sugar and lemon so they don't brown and you lose a little bit of that extra juice. People often ask, how do you make your pumpkin pie like not so steamy in the oven, bubbling over? Sweat the apples first, like just get a little of that juice out. Pecan filling is essentially, and, you know, the thing about, there's always the corn syrup debate, but where we fall on the line of, well, corn syrup is just sugar. You know, high fructose corn syrup is a different thing, but you know, we make ours with Karo dark corn syrup and eggs and cream, so that can be made a couple days in advance, too. Any of those can hold, you know, if it's a quart of filling, just put it in the fridge and assemble and then bake.
And then you have a base of bittersweet chocolate.
Yes.
In your pecan mm-hmm. pie, so describe yep. how you do that.
Really simple ganache. You know, chocolate and cream.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And so the crust is rolled out, and so we'll take our rollouts. We'll roll out our, you know, bottom shells and freeze those in the pan, and then they'll come out. And you know, we do like 20 at a time. We'll do a batch of, you know, and just put the ganache on, and it can go back in the freezer for a few days as well.
God, I remember baking a pie one Thanksgiving, and I did it. I put it in the oven after everyone was eating, and it was still raw when I pulled it out.
That's a classic. Yeah, I feel you. I mean, it can go either way. I've, like, burned pies, and then people are still like, oh, it still tastes great. But that is a thing because, you know, oven temperatures vary. You don't know what your home oven, you know, it's really kind of important to have an inner thermometer or have a really good read on how fast it's baking. A common mistake with pie is to put it into a high temperature oven and then bake it, all of a sudden it's brown on top and you're like, oh no, it's burning, but the bottom crust isn't done. I mean, you're baking a pretty dense, it's like a roast in a way, you know, it sits in the oven for an hour. So we recommend starting at a high temp and getting that color, but then moving it down to a low temp so that it can finish. And when you look at the way an oven works, it depends on your oven, but usually the heat rate rotates up to the top, comes down, so you can just throw a piece of tinfoil over if the top gets too brown, move it down to the bottom closer to the heat source, and then you get your bottom done. And another technique to make sure that you know your pie is done on the bottom is to use a clear glass Pyrex.
Good tip.
That way you can like lift it up and see. Yeah. And that's pretty like, for a clear glass Pyrex, the classic pie pan, works really well for any type of pie.
Now, you guys are known for your really sexy lattice tops and all those what do you call the ones that have the cutouts?
The decorative. Yeah, we call it decorative. Decorative sculptural. Yeah. I don't know if there's a technical term for it, but yes. Well, I think that, you know, by virtue of what it is, pie crust lends itself well to that. You know, it's the classic, you know, pot brisé is, you know, it sort of by design works that well. And if you make a good crust, it shouldn't fall apart on you when you pick it up. You should be able to work with it a little bit. You should have created some gluten in there, just not too much that it's so tough that you have pasta, essentially. So we like to, you know, at Thanksgiving, we kind of streamline a bit, but, and, you know, I think more in our cookbook we experimented with a lot of different things. And it's really fun to see people take that. It's not like we invented that idea or something, but we got excited about it. And I feel like we see a lot more people going crazy with that and just having fun, which I think is, if I have one major tip, it would be don't be afraid to make your own. Just do it. You know what I mean? Like, even if it comes out raw or burnt or whatever, at least you know, there's people will still completely appreciate the fact that you made a homemade pie, and I'm pretty sure it won't taste bad. Like, you know, it'll still taste homemade and delicious.
Yeah, my brother still ate it.
Yeah. Was he the only one?
No, other people ate it too, but it was like, you know, eating apples.
Brothers are good for things like
this
that.
This is true.
So according to a lot of the Thanksgiving research that's come out in the past few days, a lot of people pass off store-bought as homemade, especially when it comes to pies. Oh, well, they might be passing off yours as homemade.
Well, that's fine. I always say that's fine.
In which case people would believe it.
Yeah.
So for those who are buying pies and would like to do whatever kind of trickery to them to make people think they made them themselves, what can you do to kind of doctor up? Okay, now your pies, people aren't going to try to. They don't really have to do anything to make them more impressive than they are.
The difference, I think, is that a lot of commercially made pies use machinery, if you're talking like, I shouldn't name names, but like big company names, you know, but they're using machinery, and our product is still, we use some machinery, but in a large part it's finished and completed by hand, and it's important to us to like add that handmade element. Okay, so if you buy a finished store-bought pie, I think you should slice it and scoop ice cream on top of it and serve it to people so they don't know, you know, and hide some of those elements, break it up a little bit. That would be my suggestion. I don't really know what else to do.
I don't know. I've never been one of those people who tries to pass off the store-bought as homemade.
I mean, there's good store-bought things out there, don't get me wrong. I would warm it up for sure, you know, to bring back, because a store-bought pie will probably have sat on the shelf, and it probably has some, I mean, yes and no. Plenty of bakeries in grocery stores, like, do a great job, you know, but they definitely, I mean, especially if they're a more large commercial bakery, they're probably buying their crust from somebody else or buying pre-made shells or something like that. They might also compromise on the ingredients, so you could add if you bought a very simple pumpkin, make homemade whipped cream then, you know, and then plate it and serve it with that on top of it, and maybe add a little finish on top of, you know, a spice or something like that. Taste it and see how it tastes. If it's bland, you know, add an interesting ice cream or add an interesting thing to your whipped cream. Put some booze in it or something.
Did you two hear the story about the Patti LaBelle pie?
Oh my God.
From Walmart?
It's a sensation.
What? No.
You haven't heard?
Oh my God.
I've been
in like Thanksgiving head down. Yeah.
So apparently Patti LaBelle has a line of pies, and she sells a pumpkin pie at Walmart.
Oh my goodness.
And this guy, I think from Chicago, did a video that went viral where he tried the pie, thought it was so amazing, started singing Patti LaBelle songs.
Oh.
And next thing you know, Walmart sold like a million pumpkin pies.
And there's a black market for them.
How
now.
Are they making them? I wonder where they're making them.
I don't know, but they're like three. They're not very expensive.
Are they $3?
Something like that.
Are they mini pies?
Patti LaBelle is... Oh, I don't know if I can say this. Well, we're supposed to be talking to her tomorrow at Yahoo Food.
Oh, my goodness.
So we can
find out.
We can get the deal on the pumpkin
pies. I'm super curious.
But amazing, right?
Yeah, that's rad.
Nice,
I mean, I'm all about like anything that's that
pro pie.
You know, it's like kind of you can really never go wrong. Even if you buy a store bought pie and bring it to somebody, they're still going to say, "You got me a pie." There's something
true.
You know,
pie makes people happy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Totally.
So what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Do you just like hide under a rock on Thanksgiving?
Pretty much. I have to say, Melissa and I and our whole team, we're lucky that there's always invitations from friends and neighbors and customers of the pie shop. And so there's a lot of generosity where that comes from. But by the time we run 24 hours, starting this Sunday night, we'll start 24-hour operation until I'm guessing that the baking team will finish like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. on Thanksgiving morning, and then the rest of the crew will finish at about 2:00. And so in years past, I often like have a glass of wine and like just sit in the pie shop by myself. I like it because it's the only time the shop is empty and the block is dead quiet. You know, it's kind of nice. But for like a few minutes, I don't mean for the whole day. Melissa typically does the overnight.
There's Emily with three bottles of wine.
She's done. She passed out
in the back
with a pie. But no, now I, like last year I went to Prime Meats with my mom. You know, they do, or we don't cook. you know.
We don't.
I mean, we haven't, and I don't have kids or anything, so it's just like something, whatever. Like, who you'd either sleep, like my sister will sleep all day and then come up for air like Friday night probably because she will do the overnights. And we have, I mean, probably a dozen people that do the overnights. So those folks, and we try to get everybody that wants to go home done and ready to go home, you know. And then we do close the shop on Friday, which means that the bakers don't have to bake on Thursday, but that some do have to come back on Friday to bake. But we try to keep it reasonable. But we're doing the fun event on Saturday with Small Business Saturday.
We're doing a fun, which
everyone's excited about.
Yes.
So,
how do you keep the baker's spirits up? I mean, it's during your bake-a-thon, your Thanksgiving bake-a-thon.
We feed them, for sure.
Food is good.
Yeah, we have a big communal table of food. It's hard to, you know, in the kitchen, we do a communal meal every day, but or like a family meal. But during Thanksgiving, we just have like a buffet that we kind of keep replenishing throughout the day of like easy to eat food. I was like trying to look into getting a massage chair in, but
that's a great idea.
I know, and I still might, but then the team was like, well, that's a great idea, but I don't think we're going to have time to sit down for 5 minutes, but like maybe, or maybe afterwards. And then music, lots of loud music really gets played, like, you know, whatever people are in the mood for, but I think that good rhythmic music keeps the team going. And just keeping morale up in general, you know. I mean, we'll see what the weather does this year. Last year we had like sleety, rainy, not very pleasant, and that can be a real downer. And then in general, I think, you know, it's a little different. We used to be baking. We're not baking in the pie shop. We bake in the pie shop, but not the pies. So it's a little different this year. The pie team is, you know, the shop pretty much has its own momentum. I mean, there's the lines out the door, and, you know, which nobody should be afraid of the lines. They move really quick. It's just, you know.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's very, like, we've gotten very organized about moving people through that shop on Thanksgiving Day. So that has its own sort of excitement and momentum. And then, you know, we just try to really manage people's expectations about what it is. But I think for the most part, people get excited. You know, I'm always amazed at how many people offer or say, yes, I'll take the night shift. I've done it before, but it's not really my thing. I like the day.
So if you're baking for the first time this Thanksgiving, what's the best pie for a first timer to attempt?
Probably pumpkin, I'd say, is pretty relatively easy. Because you just, you know, the custard is simple. Get a good can of pumpkin or roast your own if you want. But and then eggs and cream and a little sugar and whatever. You know, you can kind of add whatever you want. You could follow our recipe if you want and make the brown butter. That's a little more challenging. But you could also just put a little maple syrup in there or, you know, different things. Like, I really encourage experimentation with that. That's probably one of the most simple. And the crust is, like, really not that hard at all. And after that, I would say pecan is relatively easy. Apple might be a little more challenging. So, you know, you did a good job for trying.
I tried. Yeah.
But I find, like, even the more you practice, makes perfect with it, and you get your style. So, but yeah, I'd say don't hesitate to try a pumpkin pie, for sure.
So what are you most thankful for this year?
Ooh, well, my business, probably, and my our team and everybody. I mean, honestly, I'm thankful that this year things are really, you know, we're 6 years in business now, and I mean, our first Thanksgiving was out of our home kitchen, which is where our business started, and I had to drive pies around to people.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's the true story. But I am thankful that what we have going, I feel like it's pretty special, and, you know, we have some big decisions to make going forward because we are a small business, and, you know, do we want to keep it small? Do you want to go big? What do you want to do? But we have an amazing team of people, and every day I walk in and watch them working and doing the stuff that they love and that we love, and no, it's a lot to be thankful for.
Cool. So do you have a speed round planned?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to do a Thanksgiving version of your speed round?
Sure.
You're Thanksgiving it up?
Ooh.
I didn't think about that. But
is this like quick
on the spot?
Oh, we didn't do this before.
We didn't do this to you last time?
Did we?
Oh, maybe we didn't do it this
remember.
Summer.
Maybe
I don't
not.
Remember.
Maybe we started it maybe this season.
Or maybe I was so nervous I forgot.
Okay, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
How do you take it?
Strong and black and just a little bit.
What's in your fridge?
A lot of weird fruit, frozen fruit from Albert, the fruit farmer, and good cheese, something to drink, yogurt, not much.
What's your favorite kitchen tool?
Oh, that's a good one. probably a good chef's knife and cutting board.
Is there Simple. What foods are you craving lately?
Lately, I've been craving wintery foods, roots, you know, the sort of hearty stuff, steak, red meat.
Is there anything you absolutely would not eat?
Not a big fan of eel.
Oh, eel?
I know,
eel
it's weird.
So good.
I know, it's weird. Not a big fan of eel, and I'm, yeah, that's probably, I mean, or things like that. Yeah.
What are some of your go-to spots?
In Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm.
Prime Meats, Rucola, Larder, Brooklyn Larder, Vinegar Hill House, Allswell, Barbalinas, too many, keep going.
What's your favorite libation or drink?
Probably a good wine, like a good natural wine, honestly. I love wine, but the sulfur stuff, I have a sulfur allergy, like my whole life, so a good wine.
Where do you want to travel to next? Where are you going to take a vacation after Thanksgiving?
I have been thinking a lot about more Central America, the Caribbean side. I like the beach. I like the sunshine. I'm a classic vitamin D deficient New Yorker.
What is your favorite pie?
Anything
flavor.
By flavor? This is. Can I be general?
Yeah,
anything
sure.
Made with fresh in-season fruit, so or rhubarb. You know, that's my favorites always is the seasonal fruits or the weird fruits we can get our hands on.
Rhubarb is a fruit, isn't it?
Well,
technically it's
a vegetable.
Oh.
Yep, yep.
Okay.
It grows, you know, like a root vegetable. Kind of, well, not a root vegetable, but it has a big root that you can move around and yeah. And I think fruit technically is. Like off of a tree or a bush.
And he's a yeah. seed, I
And
think.
A seed, yep. yeah. Yes, thank you.
Huh. Okay, who knew? I learned something. Yep. No Thanksgiving questions?
Do you have any for her?
Thanksgiving speed round. Do you like cranberry sauce?
I like homemade cranberry sauce. I don't mind the canned stuff, but homemade is so good. You know, just take a bag of cranberries and put some sugar in it and cook it. It's delicious.
Do you like turkey?
Yeah. I mean, if it's done well. I don't like it when it's like what most people don't like when it's dried out and flavorless, but if it's a good turkey, for sure.
What is your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Probably my grandmother's. She used to take sweet potatoes and fry them in maple syrup and butter. Insane. And then just like turn it out onto, like slice them up. I think she parboiled them first and then slice them up like these candied sweet potatoes, but not using marshmallows. I don't think, maybe. I don't remember. They were so.
Like how thick? Would she slice
like
them?
You I don't know an inch thick
mm-hmm.
and like these little medallions of like utter rich delicious potatoy sweet like should be dessert thing. Yeah, I love that. And I always like the stuffing too, you know. What else? I'd say those are probably the two.
What's the next new pie flavor you guys are working on?
Oh, good. Ooh. Question. Top secret. No, just kidding. There's a couple we've been thinking on, you know, we're approaching winter, so we really just have apples to work with, and then we work with California and Florida citrus, so we've done a lot with that stuff. We don't work with tropical things, but coconut, you know, maybe like a dried coconut custard or something like that we're interested in, I think. And there's also, I was just hanging out with my family from L.A., and they were saying, can you make an olive oil pie? Because the olive oil cake, you know, that it's classic
yeah.
Italian olive oil cake, so maybe olive oil custard, but I don't know. We'll see. I've got to get the team in on that. I don't have a final say anymore.
Well, it's not too late to order a pie for Thanksgiving
yeah.
and any day, really. Any day is
yeah.
pie day.
It's not too late to bake a pie.
Definitely.
And it's not too late, yes.
We can help you with all of that.
So you've got a whole week to work on it, make the crust this weekend, and
yeah.
Bake it the night
Definitely.
Before.
Definitely. Get your stuff together and, yeah, bake it the night before. Those are my big tips.
Well, Emily, we love having you on the show.
Oh, I love being here.
So
thank you.
Thank you for coming back. We know this is such a busy time for you.
Oh, this is fun. It's a treat. And I feel really happy that I could get away and chat with you guys.
Say hi to your sister and good luck next week with
yes.
the pie rush.
Thank you.
So that's it for today's Radio Cherry Bomb. We want to thank American Express Open for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for supporting small businesses across the country. And don't forget, dine small and shop small and make your plans for Small Business Saturday, which is just a week from this Saturday on November 28th. Thank you for listening.
I'm Claudia Wu.
And I'm Carrie Diamond.
Bye, everyone. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Brianna Kurtz, host of Native. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Robin Eckhart is the bomb, because she is curious and fearless in her work as an international food writer. She tells the lesser-known stories beyond borders and makes them compelling because she does it with true heart and dedication.